And here we are, it's Trust the Gut for a Sunday edition. Happy Easter, everybody. It's Clement Duke, Blaine Jungworth on the other end. Blaine, how are you doing? Happy Easter, buddy.
Hey, thank you.
So we forewent doing a show on Friday. Got a little busy. Life happens, you know, meetings and all that jazz, and I'm back in school and everything. But we're coming to close to the end of the season, and we're also on a day that we have just really, really enjoyed playing DFS basketball on Sundays. You want to speak a little bit about the success that we've had on Sundays, or like what about a Sunday slate that makes it easier or more fun to play? Like, what is it that we seem to enjoy a lot about playing on Sundays?
I think the broken slate helps. Broken slate, where they kind of like split it up so they have the morning games and then they have the evening games, and it kind of takes away a lot of the marquee players that we typically don't have too many shares of, and so it eliminates it, and then it makes it, I don't want to say an even field, but we seem to have a better grasp of the value plays and some of the players on the teams that aren't as popular, and we seem to do pretty well in those types of slates, I guess. What do you think?
Yeah, I have to say that it seems like every single Sunday LeBron's playing, but he's playing in the early morning, so we don't have to really worry about, like, okay, how am I going to squeeze 11-5 into the lineup for the afternoon, which is really nice and makes it really easy to find those values. And another thing is that the Lakers seem to always play on a Sunday evening, and the last week or so they've been a pretty ripe area to find value, especially with, well, I don't know about now because Jordan Clarkson seems to be playing out of his goddamn mind, but I don't know, it just seems easier and more fun because it's a compressed slate. We seem to do really well with compressed slates. Not to say that the larger slates are Achilles' heels or anything, but they're definitely a little bit trickier to navigate, much like last night. I mean, everybody went off. It seemed if you had a center, you had to like couple centers together, and then you were doing really well. But yeah, last night was kind of weird. Friday slate was a little weird, if you ask me.
Yeah, there was a bunch of it was kind of weird just because you don't see the centers do what they did last night. I mean, we thought that having a lot of shares of Lopez and who was the other one who went off? The one, Vucevic, was a good thing, and then freaking DeMarcus Cousins decided that he'd go for 20, 20, and 10 again, just for fun.
It was weird, and it was just weird to see all those centers go off, and we diversified the center stock, and the center bonds, I don't know, I wouldn't say too thin, but, you know, it's difficult to be on everybody. It seems like we're on the right people, just not in the right combination.
That seems to be like, that's just because it's a bigger slate. There's so many different options you can go with.
Yeah.
I mean, we'll get one or two. The bigger slates we've hit on the right, like you're saying, we've hit on the right players, we've hit on the big scores for the most part. It's just that we haven't had that night where everything just kind of falls into place, and then when we need somebody to have a big game in the later games, they go off and lock us into a big payday. But like last night, I think our highest scoring lineup was in the 300s, and we didn't even cash. I think the cash line for the tournaments we were playing in was like
something like 312 or 315 or something.
Yeah, and I think our highest lineup was 306. So
yeah,
you know, I guess nice like that will happen. It was just pretty wild because like everybody's favorite value play, Otto Porter, went off, and usually if everybody's on like a really minimum salary guy, he doesn't do that. And that kind of boosted everybody's score, I think. In the sharpshooter, he was like 35% owned or something.
Yeah. Yeah, the one play that we had that probably should have worked in a little bit more was CJ McCollum. And yeah. Shouts out to CJ for figuring it out, not only, you know, in terms of DFS play, but also for the Blazers. I mean, he's been a huge boost, and he just seems to be so effortless out there. Like, he's got this long and loping looking handle kind of thing where he looks like he's going to lose it, but the defender doesn't know where he's going to go because it's so elongated. And I don't know. Just watching him play last night was pretty impressive.
He's kind of figured it out of, like, just after Matthews got hurt. I don't know what happened, but it seemed to have given him confidence. And he's finally panning out, kind of like how Olshey was hoping he would. Neil Olshey, the Blazers GM, when he drafted him. Because that's one thing they liked, is that he's not a carbon copy of Damian Lillard, but they have similar games.
Mm-hmm.
They kind of have, like, that tricky, small shooting guard and a point guard body kind of game. And for whatever reason, it worked against the Lakers. He needs to do this against some other teams, but it's been a good few days for him.
Yeah, I would compare, they're highly comparable. And I would also say that where Damian's handle's a little tighter, the opposite is true for CJ McCollum, and like they use that to their advantage. I would say, like, you can't give either of them too much room, because if you give Damian Lillard too much room, he's going to pop it right on top of you. If you press too closely, he's going around you. For CJ, he's getting to that point where if you don't get on him, he's obviously going to take the shot, because he's a strong enough shooter in that regard. But if you stay too close, he's just got like that. It's just like a weird, herky-jerk, you know, street basketball kind of crossover, or like street basketball kind of left-to-right dribble that just kind of lulls you to sleep. And if you're not careful, he's by you in 4 or 5 steps. So,
yep.
So good show on that. Where are you looking at for tomorrow? We've got 5 games on the slate, starting with the return of Paul George against Miami. Golden State and San Antonio are playing, which that should be a really big game. I don't see Golden State resting people in that game. I think they're going to go out there to prove that they can beat San Antonio full strength. And then Philadelphia, New York, Utah, Sacramento, Los Angeles Clippers against the Lakers. So, like, where are you going first? Where do you see some value?
That Philly New York game, probably. Two teams that nobody wants to watch, but as far as DFS goes, they seem to be pretty pretty valuable teams, because you can always find like a Ish Smith or a Covington or a Jeremy Grant who like is worth 4,000 like they used to be, and they just go off like a random 30-point game just because they all of them get minutes.
And since you mentioned that, I think I'm just gonna go right. I'm just gonna just jump right into it. A play that I really like for tomorrow, and a part of the Robbie Hummel All Star team. Give her a Hummel. Ricky Leto. I think Ricky Leto just pops off tomorrow. He's been getting minutes off the bench. Of course, Tim Hardaway Jr.'s presence is a little bit of an annoyance, only for the sense that he just doesn't know when to pass the ball or do anything other than shoot. But Ricky Leto's been playing some pretty solid minutes off the bench. Anthony Early is presumably not going to play tomorrow because of an ankle injury. And, Philadelphia is not good against any part of the roster. However, with a guy like Leto, he takes shots, makes shots, and he does things that Tim Hardaway Jr. doesn't do, which, like, rebound. He can pass the ball. And just this last game against the Wizards, and a big reason why the Wiz didn't just run away with the game was because of Ricky Leto. And what did he do last game? He scored 29 points, 9 rebounds, 3 assists, and a steal, all for a grand total of 39.25 DraftKings points at $3,200. You better believe I'm going to pay for that. He went up $400, but that doesn't mean that, you know, he's not capable of that. He's been getting minutes. I know I joked with you yesterday not to play any Knicks, but Ricky Leto was a guy I looked at before swapping him out because of the Tim Hardaway. I want to call him Tom Hardaway. I don't know why, but Ricky Leto, he's like a bust out play for me tomorrow. I think he does big things I think he gets like 28 to 30 minutes, and you'll be really glad that you put him in one of your lineups. So, Ricky Leto, bust out play of the day.
All right, I like I like Leto. He is from Providence, right?
Yeah, he went to Providence.
He was a Mavericks pick.
Yeah, he was slated to be like their shooting guard of the future because he could score, and he was 6'6" and had this crazy ability and everything, but it never really panned out because I think they ended up getting Monta Ellis, and they were like, well, you can go to the D League, and then they cut him. So
yeah, he's got talent. He can score. If Hardaway doesn't play, I figure Leto should be pretty highly owned because he had a couple good games. Mm. But that's definitely worth a shot.
And like we've been having this conversation recently. It's like even though the player should be highly owned, like we just had this conversation about Patrick Patterson just today. Like it's not bad to have a couple shares of that player. I mean, you don't want to go too crazy, of course, but it's definitely not a bad thing to go a couple here. At least, like if you were to have the 25 lineup rule, what percentage of Ricky Leto would you have?
Oh, like 20%.
Yeah, that's not bad. That's what, five lineups?
Yeah, it'd be five lineups.
Yeah, that's not bad.
No.
Anybody else in that game? Do you see Nerlens Noel as a play? Do you see Robert Covington as a play? Andrea Bargnani?
Yeah, I mean, Nerlens looks good just because he's going to be by far the most talented player out there. You can pick a lot of guys from this game, I think, and there's not going to be much defense play, especially from the Knicks side, so you really can't go wrong with any Sixer. They all should be able to do well. There's nobody specifically that I'm, targeting from this one. Mm. There's just a lot of value all around.
Okay. No, I can get down with that. Then moving on, I mean, it just seems like that's a game that you want to keep an eye on. It's the Keystone game. It's in the middle of the matchup slate.
Yeah, just maybe not actually watch it. You know, just keep your eye on it.
Yeah. Just tab it. That's all you really need to do. A game that I really want to focus on and a player that I really want to focus on, DeMarcus Cousins of the Sacramento Kings.
Yeah, that's premier match of the night tomorrow, I think, Jazz against Cousins.
Jazz, and yeah, that should be a lot of fun to watch as a basketball fan and also keep track of as a DFS player because it's like a immovable force meeting an unstoppable object or something like that, right? Isn't that the phrase?
Yep.
I'm curious.
Unstoppable force meeting an immovable object.
That's what it was. Yeah. Sorry. Yeah. Thank you. Cousins and Gobert sounds like a funny kind of like boxing match. Cousins versus Gobert. Where do you see that matchup going, or how do you see that matchup going?
It's hard to say that Boogie's going to be shut down, but I am not that interested in paying $10,300 for him when he's going to be going up against maybe the premier big man defensively right now. Gobert is a freaking – he's as good as anybody else right now in defense. I don't know how good his individual post game is, but I don't have – I'm not going to be – in a 25 lineup example, I'd probably have, three Cousins just kind of off the top of my head.
Mm. And that's even with Cousins coming off of two triple-doubles, he's probably going to be the –
Not even just two triple-doubles, though. Three 20-point, 20-rebound games in a row, and then two triple-doubles mixed in there. Just stupid.
Yeah. I mean, I like him. I might go contrary to you. I might put him in five. Just because of the fact that he's playmaking so much, and he's also getting he's also getting blocks. Like, dude, he's I think he's worth the price of admission. Of course, whether or not he plays is the main issue. I've been reading that George Karl wants to get him some rest, and they may shut him down during the road games. They definitely want him to play at home. So
yeah,
they had the home game last night against the Pelicans. He played. So I would, following that logic, I would assume, and I trust George Collins, I would assume that DeMarcus Cousins plays tomorrow against Utah. A play that I'd look at if I wasn't good, in lineups that don't have DeMarcus Cousins, I'm looking squarely at Derek Favors because the Kings have nobody in the post that can defend him. Their power forward defense this entire second half, this entire season, has been abysmal. I don't see it changing with, you know, like 6 or 7 games left in the season. And at under 8K, what is he at, actually? He's at 7.4, I want to say. 7.9. So just under 8K, I see no problem playing him at all. I think Gobert is going to have his hands full, literally, trying to keep Boogie off the glass, that Gobert might not be able to grab too many rebounds, leaving space for Favors to come in and grab a couple rebounds, leaving space for Gordon Hayward to come in and grab a couple rebounds. And he's looked good since he's returned to the lineup from his hiatus with a back injury. So, you know, Derek Favors is another guy that I look at, and I really like for tomorrow too, if and when I start building the lineup.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of Utah Jazz players in that game that you can look at. Trey Burke looks good. Sacramento's terrible as point guards. I don't know anybody on Sacramento who can stop Gordon Hayward. And then Gobert, despite the fact he's been up against Cousins, looks fine. I can't picture him not putting up, you know, 45 points or whatever. He's like average for the past few games. So, I mean, really, any Utah Jazz player. The Sacramento is so atrocious on defense that, I mean, they should be able to score a ton of points. And Sacramento is good enough offensively, especially with Cousins going, that they'll be able to keep that a close game.
Yeah, I think one guy that's like a bargain bin, or is he a bargain bin? I want to make sure I kind of looking interesting in the last couple of games is Ben McLemore. Had a pretty strong game. But I think for Ben McLemore, he's not really a GPP dart or a cash play. Like, he's just kind of one of those guys, you're just like, he could come off and do something. And let's see, what has he been doing the last couple of games before I go off and sing his praises and actually be like, no, not really. Yeah, it's been okay. He's been shooting better. I just wish that he'd be... I like him a lot. I just wish he would be a little bit more shot-hungry, as Clark Kellogg would say on NBA 2K when he's playing, because he's got all the talent in the world. I just don't think he's got enough trust in himself to make it happen. I mean, look at this. 15 shots against New Orleans, 10 against Houston, 9 against Memphis, 9 against New Orleans, 8 against Philadelphia. And, like, these... Philadelphia stinks, and you're only getting 8 shots up? Come on. Charlotte's not very good, and he only got 7 shots up. Like, come on, dude. I don't want you to break offense and like get in the doghouse or anything, but come on.
Yeah, he should definitely be taking more shots, especially at the pace that they play at.
Yeah. And with the fact that Boogie's probably getting double and triple teamed, he should be open enough to take a few shots or at least drive the lane. Right?
Yeah. You would assume so.
Yeah. So moving off of that, is like those two games, the Philadelphia, New York, and Utah, Sacramento, they look like the most, they might be the most heavily played tomorrow.
No. The Golden State one for sure will be just because it's the marquee game of the day.
Okay. I don't see that. Okay. Speak to me about that one then. Like, I only see it being that, okay, you have a point, because of Golden State and San Antonio. Yes.
Yeah, assuming that Golden State doesn't rest anybody, if they go in their full strength, I would expect that to be the highest played game of the day, just because the total is going to be really high for that game. So there's going to be expected to be a lot of points scored. There's good matchups on both sides. Parker probably can't stop Curry right now, and then they're probably going to put Kawhi Leonard on Klay Thompson.
You know what I would do? This is what I do whenever I'm playing NBA 2K14, is I just put Kawhi on, I put Kawhi on Steph, Danny Green on,
Barnes?
Danny Green on Klay Thompson, and then Barnes, just, well, in 2K14 they have Andre Iguodala starting, but Tony Parker on the small forward, and it's a video game, of course, but it works fine.
Yeah, Parker's not big enough. I don't know if he's big enough to.
Well, you scheme it. You scheme it so that you're pressuring shooters, and you swap between constant pressure and pressuring shooters. Of course, this is a video game that we're talking about. But
Barnes has a pretty decent post-up game, though. Is a problem. for a small forward. Against, like, remember how teams used to do that against Nick Batum because he doesn't do anything?
Yeah,
and
that's
then,
true.
And then once he figured out how to create with the basketball and how to post up, they stopped doing that just because...
Yeah, Steve, the infamous Steve Nash
yep.
on Nick Batum, and Nick was like, what the fuck playoffs. Am I doing?
Yeah, and they kept trying to post him up, and he had, like, no post-up game.
Yeah, that was okay. How do you feel about the Golden State San Antonio game? Aside from what you just told me, like, is that a game where that's where you put most of your lineup pieces? You pull most of your lineup pieces from?
Well, I'm hoping, just as like a basketball fan, that Golden State plays everybody and they go in there trying to win. But since it's on a back to back, I doubt that Iguodala plays. Draymond Green may not play. Bogut may not play. I mean, this Steve Kerr could very easily, and for his, it would probably be the smart move anyways, just because that's a matchup that they might see later on with how good San Antonio's been over the past few games.
Past few weeks, actually. Yeah, they look like the San Antonio Spurs of old, to be honest with you.
Yep, but as long as if Iguodala and Green sit, I would definitely look squarely at Kawhi Leonard. He's been an animal the last 2 or 3 weeks. Really, since the Spurs became the old Spurs, is when Kawhi Leonard turned it on.
Right.
He only had 20 points last night against Denver, but he had 15 points in the first quarter, and he just basically didn't play. He put up 20 points in 22 minutes, and 33 fantasy points in 22 minutes. So,
yeah,
Kawhi has been a machine. And if Iguodala's out and Draymond Green's out, there goes Golden State's two best perimeter defenders, and I don't have any faith in Klay Thompson being big enough to stop Kawhi.
And he's also dealing with the bum ankle still. I mean, let's...
Yeah, so I would have no issue playing Klay Thompson. Kawhi Leonard. I wouldn't be a big fan of Klay Thompson. Like I said, I think they would match up Kawhi against Klay. Kawhi, if he's not the best... I hate saying that. If Kawhi is one of the premier perimeter defenders in the NBA... Klay's game is predicated on moving through screens and taking jumpers, and that's one of the things that Kawhi is best at defensively. So I wouldn't look at Klay, but Steph Curry, if he plays, would be interesting. Tony Parker's defense has fallen off this year. Steph's crossovers against Parker with his kind of, he's kind of losing it, yeah.
Oh, yeah. If Steph plays. Steph's handles.
Yeah.
Thing of beauty, and they're so filthy.
And the other one that is interesting is Sean Livingston tomorrow, assuming that everybody gets rested. Mm. If he gets a good complement of minutes, I like the matchup for Sean Livingston against the backup point guards for San Antonio.
Wow. I guess you have actually opened my eyes a little bit on that game.
Yeah.
For the sole fact that there could be a lot of rest given out.
Yeah,
and I didn't.
That's kind of what I'm expecting.
I didn't anticipate that at all. I mean, I'm on the opposite side. I'm looking at some Spurs or a couple of Spurs, and I'm just digging deep right now. Aaron Baines. I think Aaron Baines is a solid game tomorrow.
Yeah, isn't Splitter out for a while?
Because Splitter's out. Ankle? Yeah.
Oh no, here it is, Calf.
Yeah, I'm big on Aaron Baines tomorrow. I think he's 300 or 3,000. I don't think he's really
he's
that 3, high.
He's 3,300.
33?
Yeah.
Still play him. I'd still play him. I mean, this is just going off of the last podcast we had. We're talking about digging deep and finding guys that are worth it. I think Aaron Baines is totally fine as a stopgap center. He just goes to everything that Greg Popovich does by just finding players that fit his system and that will play his system. And then if he needs to plug and play, they plug him. He plugs him right in. They play phenomenal. And I have no problem. I mean, even in the 20-something minutes that Baines played the last game, he double-doubled, I think. I might be pulling that out of my butt, but let me check to make sure, actually. See, he's a center. Let's see here. Aaron Baines. Sorry, he had 18 points and 4 rebounds, so hardly a double-double. But, you know, in 18 minutes, he put up 18 points. It's a point per minute. And then he scores, you know, 28.5 fantasy points in 18 minutes. That's so easy. And it's at 30. Yep. It's at 33, where you don't have, you can, you know, spend up for a Chris Paul tomorrow. I mean, if you want, you can spend up for a Blake Griffin tomorrow. If you want to, you can spend up for a DeAndre Jordan if you want to tomorrow. So, yeah, that Golden State game. Now that you mentioned, it's going to be pretty full of value. I'm wondering how much. And who rests and how much they rest if they end up getting arrested for Golden State. Because if that happens, like, how much money is going to be left on the table tomorrow if there are guys that are arrested for Golden State? Like,
yeah.
Like, that's when it becomes, like, a super interesting slate, because it's like, how and who do you pay for? And, like, one move befits another move, which befits a third move, because you want to zig. When everybody zigs, you zag, but do you zig back again? You know, I don't know. It's just going to be an interesting strategy bit for tomorrow regarding that. Yeah, we're probably going to have to be on Basketball Monster most of the morning and afternoon.
Yeah, for sure, just to make sure that Kurt doesn't rest everybody.
Yeah, I could definitely see a lot of rest being given out. Fortunately for Sunday slate, like, we're able to really talk about all these games and find some of these plays.
I was just looking at the Miami Indiana game.
Yeah, Paul George returns. What is that? Let's talk real basketball. Is that a good thing for Indiana, who's been playing pretty well? Yeah. I mean,
they haven't been playing. They were on a hot streak there for about a month, but they've really cooled off in the last five or six games. They just won a big game last night.
Yeah, that game
was 2 nights ago against Charlotte. They blew out Charlotte.
That game was weird. I didn't think that was going to be a blowout. I thought that game was going to be a little bit closer. But I think it all kind of went downhill when Al Jefferson went out because of his knee.
Yeah, for sure. That's probably the biggest factor in that one, getting out of hand for Charlotte. But yeah, that's going to be an interesting game, because Miami's in the eighth spot. And I think Indiana's two back of Miami. They're a game and a half back, so that's going to be a must-win for really both teams. Miami can't afford to fall back and get within a half game. If they lose that game, I think they'll be tied with Boston for the eighth spot, depending on what happens tonight. So that's a big game for both teams.
Yeah, and
Paul George, as far as Paul George goes, I mean, they're unquestionably better with him.
Mm-hmm.
He kind of fits perfectly in the rotation, right? Because you could put him at the three. And you run out Hill, CJ Miles or Hill, Solomon Hill, sorry. And then Paul George eventually, once he comes back, to start playing full minutes.
Yeah.
And he slides right into the lineup just nicely. So, yeah, he makes them a lot better. It just depends on how many minutes he plays and how much rust there is, because they're going to need to win that game. So if he doesn't look good, it'll be interesting to see how long Bobo lets him go.
Yeah, I wouldn't. I don't think it's a bad thing for them either, because Solomon Hill's been pretty bad the last week or so. He just hasn't been very consistent. He's been up and down.
Yeah, he's missed. He hasn't hit. He has not done well the last week or so. Two weeks.
And I see them slotting. You know, I think they just start him. I think they start him and they run him out 27 minutes tomorrow. That sounds like a lot, but I think they give him that many minutes as a starter. And of course, if, like, there's, like, discomfort and stuff, he doesn't go the full. But I think 27 is a good number to put him at. I don't think they put him at, like, 20 or 25. I think they have him go pretty hard, because it's a game they need to win. And He's probably a strong competitor, and he wants to give it his all and see what he's got going. So why short himself?
Why not? Yeah, agreed.
I wouldn't play him tomorrow. I wouldn't even think about it, because he's like $5K? It's just too long. How many? Let me ask this.
No, yeah, Paul George for sure. You wouldn't play.
How many people play him tomorrow though? Because people won't play him. How many people do you think play him in, like, a 30,000-person tournament?
At 5K? I mean, you might get, like, 1% or something. I don't know. I mean, he might be worth throwing in one lineup just in case. But if he he's hoping to play 10 minutes. So
oh, that's what
that
he's
gives you an idea what his
he's hoping to play 10 minutes.
Yeah, but at the same time, they wouldn't have brought him back if he isn't like 100%. And
damn, I doubled.
He's so
I didn't,
good that
I didn't
you
realize
never know.
That. I doubled what I thought. What he thinks he's going to be able to play.
Yeah, he said he hopes to play 10 minutes.
I think I also overestimate how easy it is to play one full minute of NBA basketball.
Yeah.
With that comment, that's how I feel right now. That was pretty dumb. I don't know. If he's only going to get, let's call it 12 and a half minutes, he's not worth $5,000.
Yeah, for sure. Not. But at the same time, if nobody else is going to play him, one of the premier talents at the three in the league, and if he gets, if a huge, huge game for Indiana, if he gets hot,
maybe they keep him out.
Yep.
What
yep,
do you
that's
think?
That's the thing. That's what you'd be gambling on, basically, is Paul George. Nobody else has him. He gets hot, and then in the fourth quarter, they just ride him out because he's on fire.
Okay. I can get down with that. So if you were to play a shooting guard tomorrow from that game, Miami, Indiana, are you looking at Dwayne Wade or are you looking at Rodney Stuckey?
No thanks on Stuckey. He's been pretty bad against Miami so far this year.
Mm.
I definitely look at Wade, though. Huge, huge game for Miami. It's a pretty dumb idea to bet on a guy just purely based on how important a game it is. But
right.
Wade has come up so big for Miami in the past, and they're going to need him in this one. So assuming he plays, Wade would be in half of my 25 lineups, so 12 or 13 of my 25 lineups.
That's not bad, especially because it's a short slate. Shooting guard looks like a piece of shit tomorrow, as it is. Well, I shouldn't say that. They're Klay Thompson, he might not play because of being rested and all that stuff, but shooting guard's kind of the dregs of the world right now.
Yeah, I mean, you could even move that up to like 15.
Yeah. I like George Hill tomorrow. He's been playing solid minutes. He's been playing really great since they took the minutes restriction off of him. And he's been one of the main reasons why Indiana is even in the position they're in to get into the playoffs. They're not in the playoffs right now, are they? They're like
no, they're
ninth,
back of eight.
Yeah, So he's been playing strong. These are his last 4 or 5 games. 31.5, 38.5, 42, 29. 37.75. He had a near triple double against Washington for 53 and a quarter. 44.5, 36, 37, 30.75. I mean, his last dud of a game was March 18th against Chicago, where he only went for 18.5. I mean, this guy is like single-handedly killing it, and he's playing over 35 minutes a game. I don't see why it stops. Goran Dragic hasn't been much. He hasn't been the improvement at point guard that the Heat probably were expecting, and especially not what I was expecting, or maybe even we were expecting, because we were pretty excited about that trade for him, and for the prospects of Miami. But and there's reports that he hasn't been playing 100%. It's like he's been pretty hurt, or the back's nagging him and everything. So. I think George Hill takes advantage of the fact that Goran's probably playing at like 75-80%. And if you've got a back injury, there's no way you're going to be able to move laterally or stay in front of someone. So George Hill just continues the feast, I think, tomorrow. How do you feel about big guys in that game? Is this game going to be a slow game, a fast game, middle of the road?
I would expect it to be like a playoff type Eastern Conference game, so slower pace, especially one with Miami and Indiana. Slower pace, not too many points scored. You just got to be on the right guys from this game. I'm not a huge fan of Whiteside in this game. I do like Hibbert, though.
Really?
I think Hibbert will play.
Sell me on Hibbert.
I think he'll play. Let's see, he's averaging. Let me pull it up. He's averaging 26 minutes a night against Miami, averaging almost a double-double, 26 points a game. I just think that they'll, unless he looks pretty bad, they'll need him for at least 25 minutes tomorrow. And if he gets 25 minutes, he'll hit at least 5 times value, which is like 24 points for him.
I don't know how comfortable I feel playing Roy Hibbert.
Mostly because he's more of a dart. Like, he's definitely a dart, but he's capable because of his blocks. With the way Miami plays, they're more inside out, or at least they don't shoot a ton of threes. They're going to try to take it to the hoop. I think there's lots of potential for Hibbert. There's lots of potential for Hibbert there to accumulate some blocks and really boost his value.
Yeah, and it is all about those peripheral stats. If you're able to get those, then
he's not gonna take 15 shots, score 25 points.
No, why do you think he's not taking shots this year? It seems like the last two seasons he was taking a good number of shots, not hitting for a good percentage, but he was taking a lot of shots. Where's the step back for him in terms of shots and all that stuff? Because I would have thought that he'd become a little bit more of a focal point offensively, or someone that they can lean on for a bit. But he just looks like he's been very passive and very non-Roy Hibbert of the last 2.5-3 seasons. Where are his deficits in his game right now?
I don't know. That's a good question.
I mean,
you would have expected, right, with Stevenson gone, Paul George gone, you would have expected him to really step up this year and come close to like an 18 and 11 or something. But he really hasn't done anything near that. He's like averaging 10 and 6, I think. I don't know if it's he's only playing 25 minutes a night, so I don't know if it's a minutes thing. He's taking only about 9 shots a game. So I don't know if part of it is he's getting his minutes reduced, if Stuckey's taking shots from him, George Hill is taking more shots.
George Hill is taking a lot more shots. But he's also one of those more – he's probably one of the more efficient point guards in the league in terms of, you know, what he does with his shots. I didn't realize – that's a good point about Stuckey. I don't think I would have thought about Stuckey's shot distribution being an issue. I don't know. I just think he's – there's something there. And there's something there in terms of, like, Roy Hibbert. I think it might be more between the ears with Roy than it is – erosion of skill, because he's still got a decent back to the basket game, or like just, you know, dump in game. He's still a solid defender. He's a good free throw shooter. He's got those things. I just don't think he's got confidence in himself anymore.
Yeah, that could be. Yeah, he is one of those players that really seems to be affected by just like whatever is going on in his head, because. Remember last year, he was just like randomly awful.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
Down the stretch and then into the playoffs, he came back to being like
indomitable.
Yeah,
legitimately indomitable, could not be stopped.
And there was no real medical reason, if I remember correctly, for him doing that. It was just like him putting it together or figuring it out or what. I don't know what it was, but
maybe
he's an interesting dude.
Maybe the minutes restrictions or like the minute, like maybe there is a unspoken or untold minutes restriction on him.
There could be. I haven't looked at his old. I didn't know we were going to talk about Hibbert.
Yeah, well,
I haven't looked at his old.
I only mentioned because I think the big. It's just like you said, hitting on the right players, the bigs versus the guards in this game is pretty important in terms of, you know, where you find value and where you go and how you find the right players from that game. I think that's if anybody whoever wins, they probably have like one or two people from that game.
His shots have declined since 2010, 2011.
Oh, good grief.
It's gone from 11 down to 10.3 to actually went back up to 11 last year, or 2 years ago, and then last year it was down to 9.3, and this year it's 9.4. So his averages this year, aside from blocks and steals, are pretty in line with last year's numbers, which is interesting.
Weird. I would not have thought that. I would have thought that he was mired in a career worst season or something like that.
Yeah, no, it just kind of, I don't know, you definitely would have expected this year, though, without George, without Stevenson, that shot attempts would go up from 9.4 up to 12, but Indiana seems content to just kind of not have him be a part of their offense and just let him dominate on defense, which he does a pretty good job of.
He signed that max contract deal, what, 4 years ago? 3 years ago? And isn't he up for, he's got an ETO, I believe, right? Let me check.
He's a free agent after this year. I think it was 4 years ago.
Dude.
Because the Blazers offered him a 4-year max deal.
Yeah, that's right. Because this is the summer of 2015, the free agency that the Blazers are really eyeing, looking at, you know, guys like Roy Hibbert, Marc Gasol. I mean, but Marc Gasol's not leaving. But it's like it's a center-heavy offseason. Do you see him staying in Indiana? Do you see him moving? What do you, like, let's, for prognosticating, where do you see Roy Hibbert next year?
I think he'll end up staying in Indiana. They built their defense around him. He's just as important, I think, to them as, Paul George, maybe. Maybe Paul George is a better player, but the way they run their defense, how they funnel everything through Roy Hibbert, you could argue that he's just as, if not more important than Paul George to them.
Right. Okay. Yeah, I could see that. I'd handicap the Hibbert returning to Indianapolis at like maybe 75%. I think the other 25% is the Pacers looking to maybe move him for a pick or something. Or I wouldn't say like a drastic rebuild, but like they might look to move Hibbert and see what his value's at, or, you know, sign and trade and see where his value's at and everything.
Yeah, but they could. I don't know why, unless they were planning on just completely redoing how they play their defense. I just don't know if it makes a ton of sense for them. Mm. I think it'll be one of those things where they'll be willing to pay more than anybody else because he's more valuable to them than anybody else.
That's a good point. Yeah, he's got that indispensable argument on his side. Yeah, right?
Though he would be worth the money for the Blazers the way they run their scheme. He's a perfect fit.
Yeah. Yeah, he'd be an upgrade over Lopez, and that's not that's not like to denigrate Lopez at all. It's just starting caliber would be Roy Hibbert, and then Rolo would be a good guy off the bench.
Yeah, Lopez would be fantastic.
Don't skewer me, Blazer fans, because I know you skewer me when I talk about how Wesley Matthews isn't that important. God, okay, just a little diet, just an aside. Wesley Matthews, great person. Pretty interesting player, but Blazer fans, please knock it off. He wouldn't have stopped Chris Paul. He wouldn't have stopped the Grizzlies. He wouldn't have stopped like the last couple of losses that were really bad on that Eastern Conference road trip. He's like a Band-Aid solution. If you like, oh, they miss him. No, knock it off. Just please, because that's just not how it works. The Blazers are more than Wesley Matthews. They just had a really shitty showing on the Eastern road trip. And then against the Clippers, they just played awful perimeter defense. If you leave guys that are open that are career 40% shooters from the three-point line, they're probably going to hit like 3 out of those 7 times for 43%. Like, it's not that hard to like put 1 and 2 together. But, you know, That's just Clement's angry diatribe for the day. Like, it just annoys me when people are like, oh, without Wesley, we're awful. It's like, no, without them playing sound defense, they're awful. It's not that hard. Basketball's a pretty simple sport, I would assume. Like, you know, you just gotta, yeah. Yeah, that's it. I got nothing. Moving on from the Miami-Indiana game to the last game of the night, Clippers against the Lakers. That looks like it's going to be blowout city. I mean, if the Blazers beat them by 30, I think the Clippers can beat them by like 70.
You would think so.
However, I don't think that. I think the Lakers show spunk, which is amazing. For as bad of a team as they are, for a team that's legitimately trying to tank, they still show a ton of spunk.
Yeah. They're feisty.
Where do you go? Like, you don't go bigs there because you don't know who's going to play. I guess the only big that you can play that's a Laker is Tarik Black, but we all know about Tarik Black. Like, where do you go on the Lakers for tomorrow if you go any Lakers?
I wouldn't look at Clarkson. I would assume he's going to have crazy high ownership, and Paul is the best point guard defender in the league. And he'll be matched up against Clarkson the whole game, I would assume. So I don't see Clarkson hitting the value that he'll need to hit a $7,000 salary.
Yeah, he's up to 7'6" now. That's ridiculous. Like, what, early? Oh, he's at 6'7" actually. I mean, back when we started talking about him in what, late February? No, early February. He was what, 48?
Yeah, something along that. Something
40,
like that, yeah.
40, 45, 48. Man, it's been an interesting last month and a half for Jordan Clarkson in terms of like his play on the floor, and then, you know, his DK pricing. Like, that's impressive.
Yeah,
to see it jump the way that it has. You heard it here first with us. We were really, really high. I was really high on him, at least, and he's really come through. So, yeah, I would you look more at Jeremy Lin than Jordan Clarkson tomorrow? Or
I think so. As a contrarian play, he's been awful the last couple games, but I don't have an issue with playing Jeremy Lin tomorrow and just kind of seeing. He'd definitely be more of a dart. You wouldn't want him to be a core play, I don't think. But I mean, he's had a little shooting slump. He's still getting shots. He's getting minutes. He should be fine. I just wish his salary had dropped a little more than 5,700.
Yeah, it doesn't seem like it. It doesn't seem like it dropped the way that it should have. I just don't really like very many Lakers tomorrow at all.
Yeah, I like Wesley Johnson for 5,000.
Really?
I don't have any faith in the Clippers' perimeter defense, and he plays even when it gets out of hand. He plays for a little bit before they pull him. So,
I mean, even last night. Oh wow, I didn't realize he had 15 rebounds last night.
Yeah.
Holy shit.
Yeah, he's had 2 double doubles, I think, in the last 3 games.
Wesley Johnson, welcome to the circle of trust, I guess. That's pretty impressive.
He's being solid.
I think if I'm looking to play anybody that's a Laker tomorrow, it's going to be my boy Jabari Brown. He's getting the minutes that are vacated because of Wayne Ellington's separated shoulder. Pure scorer from Missouri. He and Clarkson played together there. He got to the foul line 9 times last night. I mean, I like it. He's got a pretty nice shot from 3 too. So if you're looking, he doesn't do enough elsewhere to make up for it. But at 3-6, if you're just looking for someone to get to what's 5 times value for him, that would be 18 points. He could do that. He could score you like 12 points. It's like, and after that, just a couple of rebounds and maybe 2 assists. And you're at 18. But I don't really have a lot of faith in the Lakers tomorrow anywhere other than, like, Jabari Brown. You could talk me into Wesley Johnson, but you'd have to get me really snockered to do that. If I'm looking at anybody, it'd be, like, probably Blake Griffin. I think Blake Griffin goes to town.
Yeah, DeAndre Jordan would be fine. Yeah. I don't know. I don't know who – the Lakers are so messed up the way they've been using their front court. I mean, depending on who plays and who sits in that game, you could go with a couple players in the front court for the Lakers. Not Kelly, because they won't use him against Blake Griffin. Mm-hmm. In that Blazers game, they're trying to have Kelly guard LaMarcus Aldridge, which is not really fair. So
right,
I would expect them. To
yeah, they
try
were
to
trying.
Use
they were trying to guard him last night.
Yeah, I mean, Tariq Black might be worth a dart. Who knows if they'll ever announce what they're doing with Ed Davis, but he finally played last night for the first time in like 3 games.
Oh god, that was stupid. I feel so bad for Ed Davis. He's just getting the short end of the stick and all that stuff there. Speaking of some of the lineups that we made tonight, Gerald Henderson hasn't done anything.
No, he's a zero. Right
and
now.
And then Nerlens took an elbow to the face.
Yeah, he did.
By Noah Vonleh. So, you know.
Yeah, Vonleh's been BC. Maxio's been okay for a dart.
Yeah, it just looks like
Biombo's had a good game.
Well, cool. We got one of our 12 cash. That's not bad. It just is important that is Henderson even playing? Is he just like
he played the first, I don't know if he got hurt, but he was playing in the first quarter. He just like literally did nothing.
What a joke. What a joke, Gerald Henderson. Ugh. Anyway, yeah. So tomorrow's gonna be fun. I like the slate. I like the Philadelphia New York game a lot. I like this Utah Sacramento game a lot. And then just a couple of value plays out there. I think the core might come from that Philadelphia, New York, Utah, Sacramento game. And then, like, the filler is just everybody else. Like, those two games are the meat and potatoes for me. And then, like, the nice side salad is everything else.
Yeah, I think that's about right.
Mm. You got any exciting plans for Easter Sunday?
Nope, just watch basketball.
That's good. That's probably what I'm going to do, too. Might even try to go hit the range. It's just that the weather's been so spotty. Ooh, baseball starts tomorrow.
Yep.
Do you have any predictions or things that you're looking forward to for this baseball season?
I'm looking forward to watching Buster Posey play and Bumgarner come back and pitch finally.
It's
been too long.
I'm looking forward to Madison Bumgarner continuing to play really well. And I'm curious to know how the Orioles are going to play without their mainstay, Nick Markakis, who they allowed to – Dan Tuquet did an awful job trying to keep. I don't know. I don't know how they do this year. I don't think they'll be anywhere near where they were last year. I think Boston's probably going to take the AL East. And then the Orioles are probably going to finish like third.
The Giants, I have any faith in.
Those are both my teams, the Giants and the Orioles, and I have a little bit more faith in the Giants than I do the Orioles.
The problem with the Giants, I think, is they lost Sandoval, and then they didn't have like a backup plan. It's just that they decided that they were better off. They didn't want to spend it. Man, Jeremy Grant is freaking killing it. I always put him in one lineup. You know that.
Yeah.
I always put him in one lineup. And then one day I don't. He has 5 blocks, like 8 points and 5 rebounds in the first half.
Just like we were talking about earlier in the season with him. Like
these guys will just randomly go. And that means that tomorrow Jeremy Grant is not a play at all.
Yeah.
Go with Henry Sims or...
Those 76ers, they don't play back-to-back good games. They play, like, one good game, and then it's a week before they play another good game.
Yeah.
What's the one that I'm looking at? Yeah, the second one that we had, the one with Ish Smith, Biombo, Drummond, Walker. That should be a fun one. I hope that one goes into overtime, just for the sake of that lineup going up, but... we'll see. We got some decent lineups going. I think we should do fine. It'd be nice to see Nerlens come back, but and then maybe even Gerald Henderson do some things. But I think we'll do pretty fine tonight.
Yeah, I'm looking at a couple of our lineups that look pretty good so far in terms of the ownership. The one with Whiteside and Wade at the guard spot and Seal.
Yeah.
That one just so far the ownership percentages looks pretty tasty. We need Markell Brown to get it going and Max Seal to kind of keep producing when he's in there. But so far, no complaints about the ownership. We did a good job with that one, kind of avoiding, hey, Gerald Henderson just hit a shot.
There we go. I like
and
that.
And he has an assist now. So.
Hey, look at him go. Wow. Jason Max Seal, 0.3%. Dwayne Wade, 1.5%. That one looks like, and then Hassan Whiteside at 9.2. Yeah, if those guys can just get to, you know, five times value, that should be really, really nice.
If Biombo gets into foul trouble in the second half, they'll probably go to Max Seal as the center off the bench instead of Vonleh. Is it Clifford? Is Steve Clifford the coach?
Yeah, Steve Clifford, yeah. Vonleh's pretty clueless.
I don't think Clifford will play Vonleh at center over Max Seal.
Vonleh is pretty clueless out there.
He's actually had a good first half, though.
Yeah, we've got 3 out of our 12 cashing right now. You know what I was noticing, just as an aside as we're getting ready to wrap up? I've been noticing that the nights that we've been cashing and we put in, like, you know, 10 to 15 lineups, let's say it's like 12, we've been cashing about around 30% of the time.
Friday was really the first time we had been shut out on a big lineup day, I think, in a long time. And that was just a funky night.
Yeah, that was a funky night because of the fact that almost every single center you can name was like, oh, hey, I'm going to have a huge game tonight.
Yeah.
And, I mean, like, we faded the right people. We faded Russell Westbrook. We faded
Marc Gasol.
Marc Gasol. We faded Anthony Davis. We faded LaMarcus Aldridge. I mean, like, we've gotten to the point where we're picking our fades strategically a lot better. And then we were on every single one of those big centers. We shouldn't combine two of them. That was it. Like, if we were able to combine, what, Vucevic and Drummond? Or Vucevic and Drummond? Cashing. Cousins and Vucevic? Cashing. Cousins and Drummond? Cashing. Because everything else was right there. So, it's just coming down to that combination bit. And I think we'll get it sooner than later. And if, you know, there's always next year, too. Not that there's still 11 days left in this season, and there's always next year as well, so.
Yeah, are we going to dip our hands into MLB at all?
We could. We could talk about that if we want. I don't know. We could do a couple of podcasts here or there for baseball, or, like, do a weekly. I've been thinking about doing maybe, like, a weekly roundup for baseball, like a Sunday night recap kind of thing, putting it out on Monday. And that'd be, like, a nice kind of stemming from basketball season back into baseball, you know, into baseball season, and then start doing a couple of football things with myself, you, and Joe, and then easing back into basketball too. I don't know. We could talk about these things. I'd be interested in doing that. So
yeah, that'd be good. Yeah, baseball seems like an interesting one to do.
Yeah, I've been hearing there's a lot of strategies around lineup stacking, like the 2-5 hitters or something like that. I don't know. I've just been reading a few things.
Yeah, that actually makes a ton of sense. Just thinking, I mean, I am obviously new to it, so I don't even know, but it makes a ton of sense just off the top of my head, because if one team, let's say like the Rockies, go up for 12 runs, the 2-5 hitters are most likely to all produce. And the other thing is like, let's say the 2-5, let's say it's like the two hitter gets on base, third hitter gets a single, fourth hitter, the cleanup hitter hits a 3-run home run. I mean, there's a huge boon, so yeah. Makes sense.
Yeah. Yeah, we'll have to keep talking about that and figuring it all out. So,
Yeah,
I like that. I like where we're going with the trust the gut in terms of basketball and then baseball, and then football for sure is happening. I need to talk to my friend Joe about that. We'll get everything set up. But, I think we're good. This was a nice Sunday, Easter Sunday lineup look and lineup talk, and we'll catch you. Are we going to be able to do one for Tuesday? Or, I mean, for Wednesday? Or how are we going to do the scheduling for the next couple podcasts?
We should be okay to do one on Wednesday.
Okay, Wednesday. All right. Well, then, for Trust the Gut, I'm Clement Uduk. That's Blaine Jungwirth. We'll most definitely see you Wednesday morning. And remember, if you're out there playing DFS, trust your gut. Talk to you soon. Talk to you soon.